is London Calling. Here is the last news bulletin for today. The time through which we are now passing is of exceptional character.
Hello everybody and welcome to episode 2 of the Full Reptile Podcast. Today I am joined by two good friends of mine, Owen and Ollie. So Ollie, just a bit of background information, was my strength and conditioning coach through the most important part of my career, let's face it. And you were in my corner for the GSP fight.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And you've been living in Japan for a while now.
Yeah, so I'm in my third year in Japan, based in Tokyo. I'm working for a professional rugby team there, obviously providing the same services as I used to provide for you, strength conditioning, program management, and general witty banter is the main things. And then before that, I was in Australia, I was with the Queensland Reds for 4 seasons, based out of Brisbane, doing the same role. I think I left in 2011, was the end of the time I spent working with you.
Yeah.
So it's been a bit of a trip so far, but it's good to be back.
Yeah.
Good to be back in the motherland.
Yeah, and we're working on a couple of little projects.
Yeah, a couple of things. Very exciting time for us, I think. Obviously, with you introducing everyone through the podcast, there's some interesting things going on. Being over here the last few days, we've obviously met with a few people, a few projects in the pipeline, and I'm sure over the next few months, you'll probably let everyone know about what's going on.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff coming up, and that kind of is where you tie in, Owen. Obviously, you were.
The fuck off all of that. Hi, I'm Ollie. I live in Japan, and I've lived in Australia, and I've done this. Come out, look how big my dick is.
I'm back in Leicestershire.
I live in the Midlands, and I'm a meat eater, so I'm already at the door. Oh.
Yeah, but okay. So, well, you've been my mate for a long time, and
yeah.
in a colleague capacity as well, because you did my banners and stuff for...
Yes, yeah, so we did all your artwork for you.
You've got to drop Stefan Struve's name as well, I know that.
Yeah, because he's the last guy to be... Well, not the last guy, but he's the guy that stopped the current heavyweight champ. But my mate Stefan, so I met you when... I met you way before we did the Nottingham banner, but we used to do all your artwork, your shorts, so
yeah,
that's cool.
And you did my website.
We're
working on, and you're currently building the Full Reptile Radio website.
Yes,
which is going to look absolutely stunning.
We've got logos for days, dude. Not in Australia or Tokyo, but they are in the Midlands and they are looking pretty swish.
The World Wide Web is everywhere, so
yes,
you're everywhere.
Yeah, taking over.
So again, we're just going to put a short one out today. I want to talk about the two top fights on UFC 220. I think there's enough to talk about. I mean, there was some amazing performance on the card. The one that stands out, obviously, for me is Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. That kid's got Paul Daly kind of power. And you like the Kelvin Kattar fight.
Because he was slowing down.
Yeah.
But he was like, he was just getting into his groove and literally uppercut into a filthy crow cop leg business. What was going on?
Yeah,
it was lovely. It was just one of them shots where you just like, because when he was so composed, and he wasn't fazed by the fact the other guy was completely undefeated and everything else. He just literally was like, all right, carry on then, and he just clipped him. And it was like I was thinking about it the other day. There are some RPRT knockouts, right place, right time.
Yeah.
Some people they are super technical, like Marty Myers, who will take you from a suplex into an armbar. That's calculated. Other people have that disgusting power, like the two main event guys.
Yeah.
So Vulcan and Francis, first name terms with the boys. But they had the RPRT knockout because they've done it that many times. I mean, who's going to stick their head in front of those fucking hands?
Yeah.
Obviously, Alistair Overeem. That was stupid. But... then that's what built such a hype train for this whole thing, when really, common sense, after we spoke, which good job we didn't put it out before the fight, because now we can look like we know what we're talking about. The fact that the whole hype train had just disgruntled Stipe and just made DC go, all right, watch this. And they just did a game plan, which was an old school Matt Hughes or an old school GSP. Well, I'll take you down. You're going to get tired, brother.
Yeah.
And they did. And it's one of them. I just think sometimes when they rely on that big hand, you just see it swing and miss a couple of times. And you just know that energy bar's going whoop.
Yeah.
Whoop. And it's, oh, man.
I thought Cormier was exceptional.
Yeah.
I thought he was so composed. He knew exactly what he was going to do.
Yeah.
He wasn't rushed into anything. He just took his time, just dismantled him.
I didn't know if his, the build-up, obviously, you get, it's nice. One of the things I love about the UFC is it's completely behind the scenes. You get to see behind the curtain so much. Obviously, we talk to you and we get to know what's really cracking off. But then the film, the things they film are great. But DC's Yes Man crew at the minute has just raised the stake to something like a load of kids hanging outside Nando's. It's just literally, he's got 500 guys behind him. Oh, yeah, that was awesome, DC. Yeah, you're the boy. Yeah, oh, yeah, you're the man. And I didn't know if that was going to put him off. But he sort of, he didn't seem to waver at all.
No, not at all.
So when he got stifled with the takedown, he's like, all right, I'm just going to fucking knock you out then.
Yeah.
And he went for it. And you're like, yo, he's taller than you. And the fact that he couldn't get his hands on Volkan, couldn't get him down, couldn't really manhandle him as how he wanted to, he didn't seem fazed. He was just like, well, maybe we'll just go to plan B. And it worked. It was, yeah, it was outstanding.
What a strange position he is in, being the champ, but not being the best. Do you know what I mean? Because he's so good, but he ain't going to beat John Jones.
Just going to chap your balls, ain't it, man?
Yeah,
and it's just
he won't beat John Jones, right? Even aside
give
from
it two or three years, he won't. No,
he's not going to beat him. He hasn't got his number.
I think he's always going to be past his prime in comparison to John Jones, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, even if John Jones takes 2 years out and comes back, Cormier's going to be 40 plus.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
It's incredible what he's done. It's unfortunate that he got caught up in John Jones's drama. You know,
to take the fighting aside, he's going to have to find some peace in that.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know if we saw glimpses of it in the post-fight interview, and maybe just the way he conducted himself during that fight, maybe he has found some peace.
See, that's what I was hoping, but then the problem was I was seeing so many yes men and such a crew, I didn't know if it was getting the opposite reaction.
Mm.
That was just my personal opinion. I even said to you, and I was like, yo, he's rolling deep. He's got a lot of boys with him. Whereas, what I love about Stipe is when he's not fighting or training, he's either buying himself Lego or like a toy or a Nerf gun or something.
In the kitchen. Yeah,
he's doing some stupid shit that. I mean, to me, Stipe has come into his own above and beyond in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
I love seeing his shit on Embedded and all the other stuff because to me, the heavyweight thing has always been a weird, weird place because early days, it was batshit crazy, just insane. I mean, what, you've got Mark Coleman getting knocked out with a shoe to the face.
Oh, man.
Just horrible stuff. The biggest turning point for me and the best thing was when Randy came back, saw Tim Sylvia being a bit of a sausage and was like, I can beat him. And Randy came in, overhand right, inside leg kick, overhand right. And to be fair, allowed him for 5 rounds, but manhandled him. That was heavyweight. That was awesome. When Brock Lesnar came in, I was fuming because that's not fair. That's like me sitting on a toddler.
I'll never forget. I was at the fight live when he fought Randy Couture.
Bullshit. What the fuck? Hit him behind the head.
It was crazy. But it was like Randy got in there. He did his lap. And Randy's a fairly big guy. I've trained with him a few times. You know, he was a decent sized heavyweight, especially for that time. Then Brock Lesnar got in the octagon and did a lap, and he looked like one of those 1960s refrigerators, you know what I mean, with a big shiny handle on the front. There was just, he was just such a unit.
What a fucking tattoo. What a bellend. So when the heavyweight was going down that route, and everyone was like, because then it pulled in all the WWE, WWF fans, and they're like, oh, Brock's the best. It's like, he's not. He's just too big. So when he squashed Frank Mir, it was like, well, you took Heath Herring to decision.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No.
You've lent on Frank Mir, who's a great guy and an ambassador and one of the nicest guys you can meet, but he's not in his prime.
No.
And then Shane Carwin did the wrong thing and punched himself out.
Oh, man.
But then when
that could have been stopped. Any other referee that might have stopped that.
But when Kane came in, I was like, that's heavyweight.
Yeah.
So the problem for me is, ever since Kane's been there, even when Vadum held the belt, I was like, nah, it's just sort of an interim thing. It's not really the heavyweight title. Even when he beat Kane, I was like, nah, Kane wasn't at his best.
Yeah.
So then when Stipe got it, I could only ever think, Stefan whooped him.
Yeah.
Like in knots, just after your fight, Stefan put on a show that day and just tore him to pieces. Like, it was incredible.
Do you think he could replicate it now, though?
Do you know what? I don't know because I struggle watching Stefan fight. Same as with you, because I know you. It's like I was saying earlier. You're a name in my phone now.
Yeah.
And it's a case that, and now your mum's going to be feeling when you're going to get punched in the face.
And that which happens a lot.
Yeah, and that makes me feel bad. So I don't want to watch it. So the problem is I like Stefan and Stipe's relationship because they're quite cool with each other.
Yeah.
Even though I think Stipe credits Stefan with that, oh, dude, you got my fucking arse into gear. Whereas Stefan's always got the win over the current heavyweight champ who's now hold the title, which is three, which is fucking insane.
I know, isn't it?
But Stipe came out of the shadows this weekend for me because when you actually look at the run that he's gone on and who he's beaten...
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And first round stoppages as well. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's not messing around.
Yeah.
I was impressed with Ngannou's heart, though, I will say that, because... Mm-hmm. He could have found a way out of there if he wanted to.
Yes.
Did you see any similarities between that fight and the Maymac fight in terms of timing, game plan?
Terms
of he was just out of his depth.
100%.
Because he'd never fought past 10 minutes.
Everyone talked about cardio.
Yeah.
But and obviously that is part of it. But also it was just the fact that he couldn't beat him up in three punches.
Yeah.
And then,
but it was forced cardio as well, wasn't it? It wasn't like, just give me a second. He was like, no, fucking do it now. Did he have him a bit of a can opener across his neck, pushing him down?
Yeah, did the same thing to Mark Hunt and Roy Nelson. I put it in inside the octagon.
Genius.
But it makes him carry the weight. Yeah.
But that's awesome.
We used to do it on Saturday mornings when we were doing conditioning training.
100%.
They were awful.
It's fucking
sessions.
Horrible.
They were.
Yeah. No. My brother's done it to me before. He's a lot bigger built than me. And he just sits on you like, and the thing is, it's beyond funny. Like, look, you made your point now. Get off. And you know when this depends on everything, and all he's thinking is, I can get out, I might clip him. And you know when Stipe is exuding that much confidence, knowing that, like, you're fucking not.
Yeah.
But it's just funny, because if that was Tyron Woodley, I think he might have been criticised for that. Whereas Stipe was up against this man-mountain that is like the biggest, most dangerous threat that everyone's made a decision.
I think everyone can empathise with Stipe. Okay, that's a smart move.
Don't fuck around
because...
But you look at Wonderboy.
The error for margin with Ngannou is zero.
Yeah. But it is when you look at... Because look at who he's beat. So Andrei Arlovsky is my age, which is fucking terrifying. But Andrei Arlovsky is almost in the realms of Chuck now. Chuck beat himself by headbutting Rich Franklin's fist.
Yeah.
And he knocked himself out.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I could knock Chuck out now, but I've got more of a chance now than when he was fighting Vernon Tiger White. So, Orlovsky now, when you look, I mean, he's fighting Stefan. And if I was watching Stefan fight Orlovsky UFC 53-54, I'd be terrified.
Yeah.
Because he was a fucking animal.
Absolutely.
He was like
the perm and the big teeth.
And like a six pack that someone airbrushed on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fuck you. That was ridiculous. Yeah. And he had the first ever video blog of his lifestyle where he's rolling around like a 97P Reg. Yeah, 97P Reg Range Rover. Like, and what? Got the chrome trim. But he was doing that, and he was a force. After fucking Affliction, you know, when he got knocked out.
Yeah, after knocks him out. That was wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, exactly. But you couldn't see it. Even when you watch it in slow-mo, it was a case that he'd whispered to him, let's jump together, and you follow. Because there was nothing extravagant. There was nothing fantastic
about
it. Just
a sniff across the
face. Yeah, it was disgusting. Yeah. And since then, when he came back, I was pleased to see him back. But his chin's bogs him alone, man. It's fucking glass. It's like him and Overeem. They've just been there too long. Yeah. Like, you know when people go, oh man, fucking he beat Overeem. It's like, he's massive and he's hitting him with like a fucking ham on the end of a stick. And Overeem's going, I fucking dare you.
Yeah.
And he let him do it. So like the only one to me that was an absolute solid, solid, solid win, other than him knocking Vadum out as he was running towards him like a kid chasing sweets, it was it was JDS.
Yeah.
Because JDS was...
And both performances as well. I know he'd lost the first one, but to go to a decision and to fight as hard as he did was part of the reason why I picked him to win this weekend, because I knew that he could, if as long as he get out that first 5 minutes and get out the wrong place, wrong time situations, or at least minimise that, then he'll run away with it. He'll stick to him. He actually used more head movement than I was expecting. I thought he was going to try and close distance. But something that keeps coming up on my Twitter and something that people keep asking me, and this is a good question for you, Ollie, as a strength and conditioning coach. People keep talking... So when mixed martial arts first came about, it was about which martial art is the most effective. Now we've figured out that that's not the case, and that we need a selection of different things all joined together and free-flowing. Now we've answered that question. The next question is, what type of human being can optimize that skill set? And there was so much hype before this fight about it being Francis Ngannou, because he's such a terrifying puncher. Mm. But if he can't fight for 25 minutes, then surely that must mean that... Well, I mean, Stipe Miocic, we know, has got one-punch knockout power, as well as 25-minute conditioning. So is there such thing as an optimum human? And does it depend on weight class? And that's a massive question.
Yeah, I think it is a huge question. I mean, as with everything in sport and in life, it's never one end of the spectrum or the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Francis Ngannou, I think, will probably end up being the champ.
Yeah.
And I think the turning point will have been this fight. He will have realised where he needs to go with his training, where he needs to go with his conditioning. Going back to your question, it's tricky to give you an answer.
Yeah.
Because you can finish a fight in so many different ways. You can finish, if you're good enough and you're explosive enough, you can finish a fight in 30 seconds, you know, in one round. It'd be interesting to do the stats on all the fights in each of the weight classes and find out the medium amount of time it takes to finish a fight, because I don't think it would fall in the category of the one punch knockout category. Everyone has to have a certain amount of conditioning, because chances are, if you're going to fight at welterweight, it's going to go 8 minutes or 8.5 minutes or 9 minutes. I'd be surprised if those really super fast twitch, super explosive guys would float to the top if you did the stats across all the fights that have ever been in the UFC. Mm. I think in terms of training, like you alluded to about our Saturday morning sessions back in the day, you have to create a scenario where cardiovascularly, muscularly on a localized muscular level, you're operating at a level that is higher than fight night. And we always said that right from the start.
Is that because of adrenaline?
Well, so for me, you can't replicate a fight. You can't replicate it because the lights aren't there, the crowd isn't there, the expectation isn't there, the fact that you're, if you win, you get extra money. Do you know what I mean? You can't replicate all those kind of things. But what you can do is train to be in a physically worse position, so that when you get to fight night, all you have to do is manage your adrenaline, stick to your game plan, and make the right decision at the right time. Obviously, that's very easy to say, sat on a sofa doing a podcast, and it's very difficult for fighters to do. But in training, you have to make it super maximal. You have to get over that physiological level that you're gonna face in a fight.
I think it makes and breaks, because for me, it's like when Ngannou came out and he's at the press conference and he was like, I found a hole in my game. And you think, well, it just shows that he was obviously relying on the big punch, which the problem is we've seen a million times before. Even if you take his, or another guy, so Chet Kongo, for example, when Chet Kongo came in, he had that story, I'm from France, yeah, they don't really have MMA there, I'm a kickboxer. And he whooped I can't remember the first guy he fought, but he put a fucking hurting on someone. Yeah. And then literally the next guy he fought looked like a bus driver, and he was like, what if I lie on you? And Czech was like, don't like it, get off, don't like it. But Czech was, physically, he looked like an action figure. He was carved out of granite with like full six pack, massive, he was massive. But he was going to be the next big thing. But he sort of played on that same, I'm just tall enough that I'm going to get you in a clinch or a Muay Thai clinch or a plum and just absolutely pull my knees through your chest. And when he got taken down, it was like lying a baby on the floor. Yeah. And I'm sort of going, I don't know what to do. Yeah.
That actually goes back to a conversation we were having off air previously about so DEXA scan is the best way to work out body fat, accurately work out body fat, lean muscle mass. Like, how much muscle mass do you need? And before it becomes too much muscle. So going back to Chet Kongo, if you look at all the champs, especially in the higher weight classes, they don't look like Chet Kongo.
Now look at Tim Sylvia.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? They're not ripped to the hills. They're not massive muscles that they're going to have to provide oxygen for over 15 to 25 minutes. So it'd be interesting, you know, if you were building the ultimate, you know, the ultimate heavyweight, how much size do you need? Because obviously you don't want to be undersized because you're going to get lied on. You don't want to be oversized because it's too difficult to maintain your conditioning.
Yeah.
How much muscle do you need before it comes before it becomes counterproductive to performance.
Mm. Well, it's just I suppose it's like anything, isn't it? It's like built for speed, built for comfort. You want a Rolls Royce, you want a Ferrari. Obviously, I know it's getting more and more fine-tuned as we get on, because, I mean, we look at it now, it's UFC 220, and you're getting more and more athletes rather than fighters. Because, I mean, I don't know if you saw Rampage and Chael.
Yeah.
If you watched any Bellator.
A little bit.
I felt a bit dirty watching, I've got to be honest. I support anyone, and obviously, your boy Paulie's in there, not happy in Bellator at the minute, by the looks of things.
No.
Spitting feathers, was he? But it's one of them where I watched a bit, because I felt like, I still like Rory McDonald, I still like Chael, I still like Rampage, but it was like your dad had gone to the welfare, put 50p on the pool table, and then another dad had come in and gone, that's my 50p. And they sort of just banging chests a little bit, and sort of like going, boy, back in the day, I'd have whooped you. It's like, lads, just listen, have a pint, shut the fuck up, bingo's on. There's no, like, there's, what are you arguing on?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It's like Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix is to prove fuck all.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
they've
absolutely.
All lost a lot.
Yeah,
that's why we're there. So
yeah,
no disrespect to them. Well, massive disrespect by that statement. But you look at all of them that are in it. It's what's it for?
Yeah,
like when it was the Grand Prix, the Strikeforce Grand Prix. That's where DC came from. That's my maybe why everyone hates him.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Because he came through. He wasn't meant to win. He was an alternate. Wasn't he?
Yeah, he was an alternate.
And he won.
Yeah. You know, I was impressed with Volkan Uzdemir's takedown defense. We were talking about his anti-clinch, you know, getting inside and creating space and stuff.
It was when he went for single legs, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It was. I mean, it was really good, but it was, and we saw the same thing with Khabib and Barbosa. No matter how good a striker you are, if you can't create that space and enough of it, you're going to get smothered, especially against a high-level wrestler. I have lots of different opinions on which way mixed martial arts is going to evolve over the next few years, but you've got to think that a tight elbow game and good knees is going to be the next evolution of takedown defense.
Well, look at how much Bisping fucked GSP up on the floor.
Right.
Dude,
exactly.
If that went another 5 minutes, I think Bisping's walking away with the belt and the confidence to say, I told you so.
Yeah.
Whereas, unfortunately, it's obviously gone a different way. But GSP got a hurt input on him.
Yeah.
And I did not expect that, but he came out looking bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you listened to the John Danaher podcast on Joe?
Oh, it's amazing.
It's just,
is that not the most scariest thing you've ever heard in your fucking life?
Amazing.
Incredible.
He's a wizard.
That's the most in-depth coaching synopsis I've ever heard of.
Yeah,
and
you,
my life is speaking to coaches.
Were you not terrified? Because I was talking to you about it.
Yeah,
I was listening to it and it's like, he was talking like this to Joe and asking questions that there wasn't.
That's
really an
awkward question.
Yeah, but the thing was, it's like, we're talking now, and if I said to you, all right, dude, what do you think the four fundamental jiu-jitsu stages are? But it's the way that he was asking him, and then Joe's like, oh shit, oh, you want me to, is it this? And he's like, no, not quite.
Guess again.
I'm thinking, he's going to murder Joe, he's going to suck his soul out and just be like, there you go, that's how I got so good at it.
It was absolutely masterful.
It's fantastic.
It was masterful.
Yeah.
I was blown
but
away.
I really
enjoyed it. I'm going to listen to it again, actually, and just really like, bore down on some of the details that he was talking about.
Have you seen the GIF? Or that is that it's? I think he's looking at Joe, and he says something, and they're talking about a fight, and he goes, "I must have been a 10th planet black belt."
Yeah,
I can't remember exactly what it was, but you know that if Eddie was there, he'd have just probably got more stoned. But it was incredible how damaged John Danaher is as far as like his legs.
Physically,
physically,
because it's one of them where you like you almost sit in awe of someone.
Yeah.
But then you go,
yeah,
that's impressive. Like, what have I done with my 36 years? Built Lego and played Xbox. Whereas then when you look at someone, like even when I've read your book, or I had it read to me because I'm a baby, and it's like, oh yeah, I went to Taekwondo from when I was 4, and it's like, fuck that. You got loads more shit you could be doing. But it's impressive that someone's got, I mean, I did stuff, but it wasn't in the same vein.
It's amazing though to think about his journey and to think, like to come to New York to be a philosopher.
Yeah, and
to end
up as a bouncer.
Yeah.
But then he's training people through other people.
Yeah.
On his crutches or sat in like a
wheelchair.
Yeah,
he just sits on the edge of the mat with a cane. He's got like a nice silver, like ornate silver top on the cane, and he just points. But I mean, you could sit and listen to the guy talk for ages.
Yes.
When I was up in Montreal helping GSP prepare for a couple of fights, we had hotel rooms that were opposite each other, so at the end of the night, before everybody went back to get some rest, I'd get, you know, sort of 20-30 minutes of conversation with him, and I could have stood there for hours just listening to him. Because no matter what he's talking about, everything's so considered and so well thought out.
The head coach that I work for now, Franz Ludica, he's obviously in a different sport in rugby. He's won the Super Rugby twice. And we talk a lot about his philosophies around the game and how he sees momentum change and the flow and the rhythm of the game and the key points that you must convert if you want to win the game and stuff. And from what I understand, Eddie Jones, who's with England Rugby now, is on the same kind of level. It really reminded me of that conversation John was having with Joe. That next level of understanding of the sport, understanding all the permutations of what happens.
But it's like no one else was there.
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah,
it's like no one else was there. Because when, you know, normally the podcast, if I said to you now, Dan, and to Ollie, it's like, let's watch this. Pause it. Just back a bit.
Pause excruciating.
It. You wouldn't give... No one's listening to this. They're going, full reptile, yeah. Full fucking boredom. with that, when I was listening to that, part of me, I wanted to hear what he was going to say next.
Yeah.
But I think it's because, obviously, as a fan, you're interested in all the rest of it. But no one else could get away with that.
No.
You couldn't have any guest.
What was frustrating for me is I've only actually listened to it through once, and I was in my car when I listened to it driving down to London. So, and I've watched the match. I remembered what he was talking about. So I'm almost crashing my car trying to picture the fight in my head and the bits he's stopping it and what was going on.
But, and his inside thought.
Oh, just his understanding of how to...
It's funny though, you're in his world. He's talking at his rate and his pace, and he's creating those awkward silences because he ain't bothered. You're talking about the thing he is the most expert at.
Yeah. You go on his rhythm.
He ain't going on your rhythm.
Absolutely.
No, you're in that spider web, dude, and you fucked it. Because it's the difference with someone like him and just breaking everything down and being able to listen to him is mesmerising.
Anyway, we should wrap this one up. It's been a pretty good one. Thanks for joining us. This has been the Full Reptile Radio Podcast, sponsored by X-Brain and Full Reptile. We will catch you next time. Full Reptile Radio is sponsored by X-Brain, the exclusive distributor for Onnit across Europe. Go to xbrain.co.uk for all of your Onnit products, as well as many other things that you're going to need, like the 4-Sigmatic Mushroom Coffee, which I am really digging at the moment. So make sure you check out xbrain.co.uk.
It can do something no other kind of lizard can do. It can run continuously for a very long time, and that enables it to become an endurance hunter, chasing down its prey.